Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to ANCAST. I'm Zach Birchie. This show, I feel, has been a long time coming. I've been talking to these folks about coming on the podcast for probably 5 years. I think 5 years. These are the folks from Seven Seas Entertainment. They publish Monster Musume, among other enormous manga titles. Joining us, we have publisher Jason DeAngelis. Jason, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
We also have editor-in-chief Adam Arnold. Adam, thanks for coming on the show.
You're very welcome.
And production manager Lisa Patillo, who you may remember used to write for a little site called Anime News Network. Lisa, thanks for coming on.
It's great to be back on the show.
Yeah, you're back on the show. We've had you on before in like 2009.
Yeah, I come on in different capacities each time. So
yeah,
now
right.
I'm on the publisher.
Exactly right. Well, congratulations. That's where you belong, by the way. I firmly believe you found the job for you. that's really cool. But I sort of wanted to get the story of Seven Seas, because y'all are this is a scrappy little company. I feel like that's not an unfair characterization. I think it's sort of an admirable thing to be. Jason and Adam, could you guys sort of run through your tale?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. In a way, we do see ourselves as a scrappy little company, although. At this point, I'm happy to say that we consider ourselves now the number one independent manga publisher in North America.
All right.
But it took us a while to get to this place. We started in 2004 when I formed the company, and Adam came on board pretty much from the outset. Adam. Do you want to mention how we met and how you came on board Seven Seas? It's an interesting story.
Oh, I was at that point. I was working on a anime fanzine called Anime Fringe Online Magazine, and Jason needed a website, so I was brought on board for that in August 2014, 2004, and it just exploded from there.
I'm sorry. So we, initially Seven Seas' mission was to create original manga,
right?
And we launched with four titles. At the very outset, I lived in Japan for 6 years prior to founding Seven Seas, and I speak Japanese fluently. And when I returned from Japan, I was totally shocked to see what had happened in the interim of my stay in Japan, which was that manga were, everywhere in bookstores, Borders and Barnes & Noble and elsewhere. And I decided I wanted to make my own manga. And at that time, Tokyo Pop was just kind of dabbling in original manga, it seemed to me at the time. I came up with an idea, and I found an artist. And we did a 30-page preview, and I actually took it to Tokyo Pop at the time, and they were very interested in it, and made an offer to publish it. And I considered it, and was very flattered and excited, but I decided to go a different route, cool. Which was to create a publishing company.
Well, you dodged that bullet.
yeah, I guess.
Good thinking. Good on you.
Thank you. But this was at a time when Tokyo Pop was the number one publisher, I guess, and it seemed like there wasn't much room in the manga space for a new publisher. At least that's how it seemed from my perspective at the time. We decided, okay, you know, we're going to do something different, which is to try to create these original manga. And we launched four titles in the first year. And gradually we began to form licensing relationships with Japanese, and we transitioned into mostly licensing manga. And you know, you mentioned trying to get us on the show for the last 5 years. One of the reasons why we have not appeared is simply because we haven't had time. We've been the company has been growing exponentially each year, and I think part of that is due to our partnership with Macmillan for sales and distribution. And since teaming up with them, let's see, when did we team up with Macmillan? I think it was
2007.
2009, actually.
Yeah, okay.
2009, we teamed up with Macmillan, and I don't have... I can't remember how many titles we've been publishing each year since 2009, but I do have in front of me since 2013. We published 65 titles in 2013, mostly licensed manga from Japan, 92 in 2014, 105 in 2015, over 150 this year, and next year we're going to be publishing over 200 new books.
Wow.
So there's been a lot of growth and a lot of hard work, and we're really excited about it and thrilled and grateful to be part of this great industry.
Right, which is an industry that's been changing a tremendous amount in the last 4 or 5 years. The very makeup of it has changed a lot. It's interesting that you bring up being the number one independent manga publisher. That really does mean something now. that's a significant thing to say now. Speaking of the company itself, like, what's a Seven Seas title? Like, what do you look for when you're licensing something?
Well, you know, obviously, since we're a business, we want, you know, first and foremost, we want a title to sell.
Right.
So it has to be something that we feel will have either a broad appeal or a very, very strong niche appeal. But, you know, we're also, I think there was a certain perception, there's been a certain perception of what Seven Seas titles are that may, you know, maybe that lean a little more to the fan service-y side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reality is that's been changing recently. Over recent years, I know Lisa has some strong opinions about this, and maybe you wanted to add something about it, Lisa.
As listeners and Zach probably know, that I come from many years of blogging, manga blogging, and then writing for sites like Animes Network. And there was definitely a perception that Seven Seas was more of a fan service-y publisher, but that has never been exclusively what Seven Seas has published, and certainly even less so today. One of the things that I absolutely love most of all working for Seven Seas is the diversity of the titles.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it can be a little bit of a book whiplash, like going from the sweetest, fluffiest romance story and then, you know, over to like a horror like Frankenfran or a fun harem comedy like Monster Musume. So we don't have any specific genre that, you know, we stick to. We just kind of look for one, you know, you want to see what's popular, what people are scrambling for.
Right.
And also to fill holes, like, you know, what is there not a lot of? Well, there's not a lot of other publishers doing traditional horror, for example. So we have some really great horror titles that we publish.
I think also part of the reason why we may have gravitated to certain titles in the past is the realities of running a publishing business.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, if you think about earlier on, of course, we offered fewer books per year, and you know, and therefore these books had to be profitable books, so we were gravitating towards what we identified as what we believed would sell. However, the more we grow and the more titles we're able to offer each year, we're able to look for a multitude of different genres that will have wide appeal and offer something to everyone. And that's the direction that we're going in now. So, you know, we've got of course Monster Musume is kind of a representative hit of ours, but we have titles like Haven't You Heard on Sakamoto, we've got Orange, we've got The Ancient Magus Bride. I think we're covering, we've got tons of great Yuri titles. We have some more shoujo coming up, so we're covering just about every genre.
Right, yeah, and I mean, how much of this in originally, I mean, so obviously there's a, you know, what's going to sell, so that's any business's, right. You know, number one question. Then there's, what do you have access to? And I would imagine that is the bigger question a lot of the time for somebody like you, licensing, especially in a business where you have a tremendous amount of consolidation and the industry itself moving into the American market. So right. how big an issue has access been for you?
You know, that's an ongoing issue in a semi crowded market where there are competitors.
Right.
And I think the proof is in the pudding that we've been successful in being nimble and in forming licensing relationships with a variety of publishers, and finding and curating licenses that people may not have been aware of. You mentioned the consolidation, and we don't particularly feel as if we're being squeezed out or anything like that. Actually, our licensing relationships are expanding, and we're talking to licensors we've never talked to before, and are in negotiations now for all kinds of great licenses. So I think that licensors realize they see our success and our growth and our longevity, and they want to do business with us.
Right. I would imagine those doors started opening after you had started having some real, real sincere success.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's cool. So the manga market in general, how would you characterize it right now?
Growing.
Growing, still.
Yep. Still growing. Our sales are better than ever. And our backlist continues to grow. So I just see continued growth.
Well, that's right. For Seven Seas, it sounds like times are great. Overall, you think there's like, it's just a growing industry that we're not on the cusp of any kind of a market correction.
I certainly don't want to be a doom and gloom predictor. I don't know. I don't really have an opinion.
There's a lot of chatter market out there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Adam or Lisa want to speak to that as, you know, more from a fan perspective.
Well, I think right now the biggest thing you notice in the manga industry in general is that it's growing, obviously, but it's changing.
Right.
You have a lot of people who are moving to digital only because mm-hmm. there's so many titles out there.
Yeah.
You know, getting into things like simulpubs that are trying to compete against Scanlations. So, you know, some light novels are becoming more popular. So I think right now manga is growing, but it's also undergoing a somewhat awkward but inevitable morph. So in the next couple of years, we'll kind of see where the manga industry, what it looks like after we're through this transition period.
I don't think anyone really knows the answer, you know, right. Since we don't have a crystal ball, but all we can do is look at, you know, the interest in our titles, from readers and from retailers.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense. How aggressively are you guys moving into digital?
We're moving pretty aggressively. You can only go so fast when you have a backlist library as large as we do.
Right.
And then there's a lot of different factors that come into play. But, you know, we've recently relaunched onto Comixology. And now that it has been bought by Amazon Kindle, that also means that now our titles are simultaneously appearing on Kindle as well. As well as we have a good relationship with Bookwalker. And our titles are on Barnes & Noble's Nook. So... now that we've got a good chunk of our titles on there, it's just a matter of kind of filling in that backlist with the titles we feel that people really want to see on there.
Right, and that catalog is super important, right? Having that big catalog up there, that's largely what sells, from what I understand, that's largely what sells new books, is having that giant catalog.
yeah, like there's so much to that people can choose from these days. I mean, obviously, you know, a quality of series is always going to speak for it. You know, things like that. But, you know, people are used to reading manga in such bulk.
Right.
Whether they're buying it legitimately or reading it online, not so legitimately. But yeah, you definitely want to have, you know, and we see that, but we also are careful about putting up the series first that we think should be there.
Right. How do you feel? Do you think that the medium has become more disposable just out of necessity?
I do think that some people, a lot of people, unfortunately, look at it as being disposable and that there's so much of it.
Right.
It's kind of become like flipping through a TV channel.
Watch
something for 5 minutes, you can skip on to something else.
Right. Well, what I mean to say is, like, there's such, especially this is happening in anime too, where there's such a glut of, you know, B-minus titles, like mid-range, mid-shelf, kind of shruggo, sort of okay to kill a Sunday afternoon, but you're never going to think about it again after you read it, and you might not remember you ever did. Like, there's a tremendous amount of that material, and it feels like that's what's filling up the digital space, is that stuff. And that stuff, it has, like, the cream will rise to the top, but there's not as much cream as there is chaff, I guess. It kind of seems like that's what's happening.
Yeah, you know, this is one reason why we've gradually been releasing our catalog digitally.
Right.
And we were actually early adopters with ebooks,
right.
You know, for a manga, but I think it was Adam, wasn't it the Kindle that we started with, Kindle and Nook?
Yeah,
years ago, and it was our original titles that we put up there,
right?
Because at the time the Japanese did not understand and were not interested in you know, digital manga.
Yeah.
And there were very few manga ebooks up there on the Kindle, and we saw some excellent sales for about a year, and then all of a sudden Viz I think put their entire catalog on the Kindle. Was it all in one day or all at one time?
Yeah, pretty much killed it.
Yeah, so you know, then there was just so much content, and this was at a time when people were predicting Bookstormageddon.
Right.
And I was at that time very fearful that, oh no, we're going to lose all our bookstores, and then what are we going to do? But luckily that did not come to pass, and it seems kind of what you're alluding to, Zach, or related to that, that that ebooks have plateaued to a certain extent, and we're very happy that print is still strong, but there's definitely a lot of value for a publisher and for readers to have ebooks available. But we're just doing it. We're now releasing titles very judiciously and gradually.
Yeah, right. It makes sense. That release strategy must be. I mean, how much time do you spend agonizing over that strategy? Like, okay, when do we release this stuff to get maximum exposure and make sure we're not flooding out? Because it sounds like you learned your lesson from Viz about releasing too much at once.
Yeah, I think we spent a lot of time agonizing about it and debating it. It's not our number one priority because print is our number one priority, and we've got a lot of books to get to the printer each month. But it's a topic that we're always discussing and we're negotiating with. We haven't acquired digital rights to everything yet, but we're in the process of doing so, to all of our catalog, but we're in the process of doing that now.
All right. Cool. So speaking from the independent perspective, what is it like working in what is it like for you right now competing in an industry where your biggest competitors are owned by the giants of manga publishing in Japan? And how has that changed the industry for you?
I think it's great fun, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I love the challenge. And we're used to being the underdog. And I in fact relish being the underdog. And okay. I've said many times in the past that I see Seven Seas as the Millennium Falcon of manga publishing. Being that we're nimble and quick, we have a loyal great team of people who work at Seven Seas. You know, because of our strong relationships with Japanese licensors, I know Yen Press has been partially acquired by Kadokawa, but before that, you know, there was Viz, of course, Kodansha. This is just business as usual for us.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the industry has changed a lot. I mean, did you see this level of consolidation coming? I mean, I mean, Adam, I would imagine you maybe predicted it.
It's really hard to say. I mean, I didn't expect to see Vertical get basically bought by Kodansha.
Right.
So yeah, it's a very small industry at this point.
Some stuff has been fairly stunning. So whether or not you want to answer this, obviously up to you. Have you received any overtures from Japanese publishers looking to buy you as they're into the American market?
I'll answer that, and the answer is no. We haven't, and I don't think we would really be open to that,
right?
Because we have a fierce independent spirit, and we very much love what we're doing, and we love to do it the way that we do it. That's pretty much off the table. And you know, the other thing is, keep this in mind, Zach, that alliances are constantly shifting,
right?
In this kind of a landscape. So, if a publisher gets bought out by one publisher, then all of a sudden that defines them and may limit them to mainly publish works by the parent company.
Right.
So the fact that we're unaffiliated means that we can license and work with anyone, and we love that freedom.
Right. And now that you've had some serious success, all those people want to work with you. So it sounds like it's working out pretty great.
It is. Yeah.
That's cool.
We're very happy. And the more, you know, I always think of if you think about abundance theory, the more the merrier. I don't feel threatened by, you know, so-called consolidation. I mean, the more content that can be brought out from Japan, the merrier. And there will always be room for more content and good content.
Right, exactly. Seven Seas started out with some original content. Are you still publishing original content? Is that something you want to get back to?
It is... It's my original passion,
right?
It's not as profitable. It's a lot more risky. It's a lot than licensed properties. But I love original content, and we do publish some. One of our successful original series, Hollow Fields.
Mm-hmm.
We just published a fourth volume of that.
Right,
just released that. We have other projects in development. Yes, but it's still comparatively, compared to the ratio of licensed products, it's still very, very minimal.
Right. I mean, so in terms of like original content, because like Adam, you wrote and produced stuff, you know, back in
right.
the day, right? Do you want to go back
Owie
to doing
House
that?
And Vampire Cheerleaders. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, do you want to go? Is the idea to eventually get back to doing that?
Me personally,
yeah.
I'm too busy.
Yeah,
I'm
all right.
Really too busy to write something myself. But I really do enjoy working with writers and artists to develop stuff and basically work on projects. So yeah, I would definitely like to get back to doing more OEL original titles. But more in an editorial, like overseeing capacity.
Yeah, right.
More
as a producer.
Right.
Yeah, that's a fun role.
Yeah, it is. It is
a lot of work, but it's a fun role. All right. Well, so we're in the last half of 2016. Before we get to these Twitter questions, we're in the back half of 2016. What should people look forward to the rest of this year from you?
Well, from us, we've got. The Monster Girl Encyclopedia. We've got Re-Monster, We've got Magia the Ninth, which is a 2-volume series. We got a Holy Corpse Rising.
I'm very excited for Galco-chan.
Oh, right.
Oh, yes.
As long as that comes out.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm excited
about
that.
Full color for anyone who's got a few people asking us. We are printing it in color as the original one was.
Nice. Nice. All right. Okay, exciting. How many more conventions do you guys have? I assume, are you doing Otakon?
Nope. No. You know, we these days we focus primarily on Comic-Cons and Anime Expo.
Right. I mean, at some point, it's not your business model to go to conventions, you know?
Yeah. we got a lot of books that we have to focus on.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I would imagine at some point. And I mean, I don't... like, just personally, have you noticed any sort of decreasing value in spending money to go to a lot of cons? Because I'm hearing sort of rumblings about... From various companies saying, like, it's not as valuable promotionally as it used to be.
Yeah, I always felt that it was not the greatest use of resources, both time and money.
Yeah, considering the cost.
You have to have a presence, but if you kind of limit it to the most productive conventions.
Yeah, right. The ones you'll actually be seen at.
Yeah, and there's so many conventions these days.
Right.
So close to each other. You have a lot of people end up going to multiple conventions, so you're not going to get the same spending power at an individual one.
Right.
People are so spread out between... Sometimes it feels like there's, 2 conventions a weekend in the summertime.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it can get a little crazy out there.
Yeah.
So I think now more than ever, you know, all publishers are really stepping back and being like, okay, what shows have our audience... at it, or who, what shows have an audience that we can find?
We had a huge, response at Anime Expo. It was just fantastic. And Okayado, you know, the creator of Monster Musume was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing convention, and he did a great panel, which we took part in, along with Bookwalker. So that was really exciting, and it's very exciting to interact with readers and fans in person, because usually we just have our heads, you know, in front of the computer and are working all the time to create these books.
Yeah,
but, you know,
right.
That's our primary job.
Just out of curiosity, small team like yours, this many books, sudden success. How many hours a day do you guys work, and how many days a week?
That's a secret.
that's part of our secret sauce.
Okay, because I... All right. You know, I...
We're very hard... We're very, very extremely hard workers.
Yeah, I bet you are. That's why I'm asking that question. You got to give your life to the cause. That's right. All right, let's get to these Twitter questions. All right, this is a personal one. Thundersnapper wants to know who your favorite monster girl or guy is from any manga series. If you have a favorite. And Adam, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, mine is Pappy from Monster Musume.
Okay, and Lisa?
Mine's actually probably a monster boy, Bahamut, who is a goat-headed butler from our series Devils and Realist.
Oh, right, that had an anime.
Yep.
Yes.
So the manga now is past where the anime ended, and we're getting into some very dramatic territory. So I have a lot of feelings about that character in particular right now.
Yeah, all right, sounds good. And Jason?
I gotta say, I'm very partial to Reknera from Monster Musume, but you know we also had this incredible professional cosplayer.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Dress up as her at Anime Expo.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Outstanding. I feel like that character is like, if you want to show someone the potential of the concept, you're like, look at this.
Exactly. Very well said. That's true.
You know, look at this awesome thing. All right.
Yep.
Somebody asked about OEL manga. Besides Hollow Fields, is it likely we'll be seeing more OEL titles released by you in the near future?
It depends what you mean by near future. For us, we work, you know, we have to schedule things like a year to a year and a half in advance at times. Yes, there will be more. There will be more original projects that we have in development currently, but... not for maybe within a year's time.
Okay, all right. The Maraxmers asks, Jason, you can probably answer this, what are the challenges in translating light novel prose so that it's faithful to the author's style, but it reads well in English?
That's probably more of an Adam question.
Oh, sorry, Adam question.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's finding the right translator, and it's generally need to hire a native English speaker, so not a Japanese-born translator, but more of a, you know, American or basically an English speaker.
Really?
That knows how to write well in English to translate it. And even then, once you have the translation, you need to polish it. So you need to send it off to a rewriter, script adapter. And then you have to send it to a copy editor maybe once or twice, maybe three times if you're not lucky. And then get it proofread. So yeah, there's a lot of steps to getting a light novel to read well. It's still an uphill battle because it's all text. It's all prose, and it has to read well.
What? How many drafts is that?
How many drafts?
Yeah, like how many? That sounded like seven or eight steps.
it can be as few as four.
Yeah,
if you're lucky, but as many as seven if you're not.
Oh, jeez. Some of those books aren't short either.
No, they're not.
Adam is extremely obsessive about translation quality.
Right.
You know, whether it's light novels or manga. Sometimes I feel like he's a little too obsessive, but, you know, the goal, of course, is excellent quality.
What's your philosophy on translation, Adam? Like, do you have a guiding principle?
It has to... When we translate something, regardless of if the translation reads well as a script, I still want it polished by a rewriter. Mm-hmm. I need a second pair of eyes, and then only then will I look at it to copy edit it, and then once we get it in get it lettered, then we proofread it again, look at it, polish that lettering. So my policy is that it has to be a very professional looking book. It has to look and read like it was natively made in America, but still exotic enough that it has the Japanese quality. Mm-hmm. So basically the highest quality product that we can do in our timeline. That's really it. Just high quality, best we can do. Strive for the stars.
I don't see a lot of complaining about Seven Seas translation. I would imagine you are intimately familiar with the feedback you get. Is your approach working?
I think it is. I mean, people really like what we do. I mean, of course, there's always, you know, people that will lament what any choice you make or any mistake. But we try to, we're very open. If we make a mistake, we take note of it, and we will fix it in a correction as a reprint. We do try to listen to the fans somewhat. We try to stick to, if there's like already an anime out, we'll like the Funimation or Sentai put out, we'll look at their translation and like try to match like things a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's still, we want to do our own thing, and we want to put out the best product that we can. And sometimes you just don't have, you just need to do what you feel is right for the best title, for the title that's best at the end of the day.
It has to be, at the end of the day, it has to be a good read.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I also find these days, especially things like scanlations or animes coming out, is you end up kind of, like, we translate from the original manga, and we stay true to it, and we want to make an excellent reading experience based on the manga. Mm-hmm. But you have a lot of people who compare what we or any other publisher do to, you know, what they read first in the scanlations, or what they watched first in an anime, whether, you know, an actual stream or a fan sub. And then you get, you know, you have to learn to sift through what is people's expectations based on a version of that story has already been adapted by someone else, and the fact that we're actually working from the original, if that makes sense. So it's like a lot of people will be like, oh, well, I read the original Japanese, and they translated this as this. Whether they actually read the original Japanese like we did, or the scanlation,
right?
That is totally different thing.
You need to put a thing on the page in the back that says, like, you're reading this book the wrong way. There should also be also the first translation that you read is not necessarily correct.
Disclaimer.
Yeah. Whatever garbage you read on the internet illegally is not is not right. All right. Tobaganhawk asks, did Monster Musume actually influence your decision to pick up Frankenfran, and how is it being received?
Frankenfran, I'd actually wanted for a very, very long time.
Right.
And I had found Monster Musume on 4chan, and I also found Frankenfran on 4chan. And really, the main hang-up was always... What do we do about the covers? How do we get these covers in the bookstores? Because, I mean, if you've seen them, they're very sexy. And of course, when we finally did get them in the bookstores, we did have a problem with that. We can't get book 3, 4 and beyond really ordered well in Barnes & Noble, but they sell well online in places like Amazon and such.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had loved the series. I love horror, and that's just one of the quintessential horror titles.
Right.
Actually, Adam was petitioning me for years about licensing Frankenfran, and I kept looking at it and saying, "Wow, this looks really neat," but I don't know. I mean, you know, the huge, huge level of gore, and then looking at, you know, the covers might be problematic for bookstores, but. Yes, after seeing the success of Monster Musume, we thought, well, you know, there's probably an audience for this now. And you know, times have changed, and this is, in essence, another Monster Girl title.
Yeah. I guess that's one way to put it.
It's also really fun sometimes just to, I mean, you know, we're business. We want to license and publish what sells. But, you know, a title like Frankenfran, which has such a passionate, dedicated, long-time fan base online,
yeah,
who had long since given up on being able to own it in English. It was really fun to be like, you know, wonder,
yeah,
how they're going to react or going to give them the good news.
Yeah, nothing's that was
coming.
It was really cool. That was a cool day.
At the end of the day, we're manga fans too, so
right,
we're going to have passion projects, and of course, we hope they all do well. But
it,
sometimes you just got to go with your gut.
Yeah, and on that note, it is extremely gratifying when we announce a license and see positive fan response, and you know, it's like bringing a Christmas present and having people open it and be delighted at what they see. So we were excited that people were excited about Frankenfran.
Yeah. All right. Okay. A Soulful Chris asks, how badly did the Boogie Pop novels exactly do way back when they were first released?
I will answer that. They did not do nearly as badly as we had thought at the time. We were Boogie Pop was our very first license,
right?
For Seven Seas, and we were a very young company, and I think we had very high expectations for it, and we had some pretty big orders from Borders at the time. But in one thing that I think we weren't aware of at the time was the phenomenon of backlist,
mm-hmm,
because we didn't have any backlist,
right,
as a new company. Over time, the series ended up, you know, doing much better than we realized.
One thing that did hurt Boogie Pop, though, was the fact that in order to get it into bookstores, we needed to make it Borders exclusive. So when the exclusivity ended, other bookstores were a little reluctant to pick it up. So that did hurt it a bit, and that's a lot of why we initially said that it didn't do well.
Mm.
But in the long run, the numbers do pan out, and I mean it did fine. We didn't lose money on it. It did good.
Yeah.
Okay. Redcar728 asks, can you offer any comment on why the Familiar of Zero light novel localization was canceled?
Yes. We announced that title along with what we intended to be as our light novel imprint. I think this was what, 2009 or 2000? Yeah, it was probably 2009.
More like 6 or 7.
Oh, really? That early? Okay. Yeah. I lose track of time.
It was right after Boogie Pop.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it was part of the second wave of what was going to be our light novel imprints, like expansion. Zero's Familiar, Ken O'Con, the Boogie Pop re-release, and I think Gun Princess was probably part of the second wave that we were planning to do.
And we were just you're right, it was that's right. So we were just partnering up with Macmillan at the time for distribution, and manga was a new category for Macmillan.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a big list, including a whole bunch of light novels, which was totally new for bookstores. The phenomenon of light novels, and Macmillan basically told us, "Look, you've got too many titles. You've got to delay or cancel a bunch of them." This was when we first partnered up with him, and we considered it and we thought, okay, we just can't get into light novels now. We bit off a little more than we can chew, and that's why we decided to cancel Zero's Familiar, among other light novels.
Okay, makes sense.
Yep.
All right, Angel XO3 asks, how much has the Yuri manga market grown in the U.S. and have the original Japanese manga licensors taken note of that?
Are there a lot of other Yuri publishers other than Ichijinsha? I know there's a few.
Oh, there's a bunch, but and some of them don't specialize in Yuri, but they publish Yuri titles.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, but I think they're kind of in recent meetings that we've had with licensors, they were surprised at the success of many of our Yuri titles. They were surprised and pleased about it. I know Lisa may want to talk about the Yuri category and its growth in the U.S. because I think it's a topic of interest for her.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been and still do buy anything Yuri that's published in North America. So that was, my big and first connection to Seven Seas was my shelf lined with the Yuri titles.
Right.
And as someone who also purchases a lot of Boys Love, you look at the two shelves next to each other and you have a shelf of Yuri and then three bookcases of Boys Love.
Right. Yeah.
So there's definitely kind of an imbalance there. You're seeing more of them, I think, come out in Japan. And obviously based on just the sales alone and people online, like Yuri's, it's very much wanted. But there isn't quite the amount to pick from Japan as you do if you're doing like Boys Love. I think Seven Seas picked some really great titles, gauge the market. People are still clamoring for more. And I think in North America, in our society and culture, it's a really good time for it. You have a lot of shifting, societal values, a lot of discussion, and a lot of people that these books are targeted for that really need series about, two girls being romantically close, and that's okay, and it's fluffy. And yeah, I just think now's the best time to expand even further on a market we already know is really passionate about Yuri books.
And I think it's safe to say that Seven Seas is the largest Yuri publisher in North America.
Right.
What happened was a lot of other manga publishers were already, publishing Boys Love and had imprints dedicated to that. But no one was really publishing Yuri. And we thought, okay, this will be a great area for us to get into, I think what was our first title? Oh, well, we started with was it First Love Sisters years ago?
Well, Kashimashi before that.
Kashimashi,
kind of Yuri,
right? And then we love publishing Yuri, we have a lot of Yuri titles coming out in 2017.
Yeah, that's it's like there isn't that much of it in Japan, and you're the publisher that seems to actually know about it and do things with it here in the U.S., so, yeah. Okay, Invalid Name wants to know why your titles are not available on Apple iBooks.
I can field that one. There's not a whole lot of manga in general available on Apple iBooks, simply because, one, they have a few more hoops to jump through when it comes to getting titles on there. And they're very strict on content, so not a lot of manga falls into their safe zone. That being said, you know, we are actively working to get our manga to where the readers are. So while we don't have manga there now, that could change in the future. But that's kind of why it's not there at this moment.
We did have OEL on iBooks at one point in the past. And it's true. There were a lot of hoops to jump over. You had to have a Mac. You had to have their specific proprietary software installed. You had to upload them in EPUB format, enter all your metadata into the specific program, then upload it, then wait a month for them to approve it or disapprove it, reject it, and then pray it went up. Yeah, it a lot of hoops.
Sounds
and
fun.
Very little return.
Right. Yeah. All right. Matt CGW asks, any news on Freezing's performance and whether First Chronicle or Zero will be licensed?
Freezing is doing nicely for us. It's not a huge hit, but it's backlisting well, and it's selling at a steady rate. It's a very, very long series, as I'm sure you know. So we don't have any news about at this time yet whether we're going to be licensing the sequel series or the prequel series. We'll keep everyone posted.
It's safe to say that if people continue buying it, you'll continue releasing it.
Yes, please support it.
Okay, all right then. Julian Moraine asks if you are planning on licensing more light novels.
You know, light novels is not our focus, as you know, but we do license light novels on a case-by-case basis. We recently announced a Hatsune Miku light novel at the Anime Expo, I believe.
Right.
So the answer is yes, but very, very selectively.
You'll dabble.
Correct.
All right. Net Brian T asks, have you considered manga-themed adult coloring books? It's a very specific question.
Yes, we have considered it. because we indeed have a coloring book imprint called Waves of Color.
Right.
And we're publishing 13, pardon the unlucky number, but 13 adult coloring books this year.
Cool.
None of which are manga themed. However, we have a set of coloring books which you can buy individually called Color the Classics, and these were created by a Korean artist, and they have kind of a manga or manhwa style to the artwork. Alice in Wonderland, Anne of Green Gables, The Wizard of Oz, The Snow Queen, Beauty and the Beast. And they're sold at places like Barnes & Noble on Amazon, of course, and they're even stocked and doing very well at Walmart.
Cool.
We're really interested in this adult coloring book, boom, and are waiting to see where it goes from here.
Right. Find out whether or not it's a trend, and then, yeah.
Right.
Let's see. Brainchild129 asks, whether or not you're ever considering licensing Boys Love. It seems like the only form of ecchi you're not handling.
I can field this one.
Can you?
I can. My entire room dedicated to it can attest that I can.
I was going
to
say.
we are absolutely opening, open to licensing and publishing Boys Love. But like with all our books, you know, we have to find the right one. We're not just going to publish something purely because it's Boys Love. It has to be something that we really think, you know, has great art, a good story. We don't sell any title just based on, well, it's this genre, so blah. That said, we do actually have a new license announcement that we can make on the show right
now. Oh, really?
That is relevant.
Oh, dang. Okay. All right. I'm excited. Lay it on me.
Okay. Well, we've licensed the manga, The High School Life of a Fudenshi, which is currently an anime streaming on Crunchyroll. And it is about a young man who is a huge fan of boys' love. And so it's kind of a comedy series that's a little bit of a, you know, not a parody, but plays on a lot of the tropes and the stories of boys' love fandom and the industry and what it's like to be a young man who's really into romantic stories between two guys. So this is kind of our direct dabble into boys' love territory.
Cool.
Alongside with other titles we publish that are very close, like Devils and Realist and Merman in My Tub, among others. But yeah, that's a new title we've got coming out in 2017.
2017. All right, awesome. Okay. Well, thanks for making that announcement on the show. All right. Okay. Let's see here. Moving on from... Okay. Reb Matsu asks, yo, I need to know where you guys harvest your translators because y'all next level. Any advice for one trying to make it?
Okay. Sure. Just visit our website and fill out our contact form and send us your resume and any samples you have, and we will we'll take a look at it, because I'm always looking for new translators, and I'm also always looking for new letterers. So
oh okay
yeah,
all right.
Anybody's wanting to work for us and has very high quality standards, is very good, and you can submit to us.
Cool.
And we'll look at it.
Okay. All right. This is our last question. Well, last two. Sasquatchulas asks, you bring over a lot of Monster Girl titles. What is the strangest Monster Girl manga you've looked at, licensed or unlicensed?
I think for me, it might have been the one about the cockroach girl. or maybe the encyclopedia about moth girls.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Is a moth girl technically a moth? I guess it depends on how they look.
Yeah, I guess you could kind of debate if it counts as a monster girl. If it's like...
If it's just wings.
If it's a bug.
If it's just wings.
She's a full-on moth. She's just got like a kind of a human torso and head. But yeah, she's full-on moth almost.
So like the, you know, like feelers and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Okay. Moving on here. Last question from Setsunu Mato. Well, this isn't really a question. He just wants you to license more manga from Kirara magazine, like Hanayamata or Gojimon. There you go. It's a license request.
Oh. Okay.
All right. Notated.
Noted. All right. That actually wraps us up. That's all of our Twitter questions. Listen, guys, it was great to finally have you on the show. I am really happy that you're having so much success lately. And happy that there's an independent publisher out there who's doing so well. So thanks again for coming on.
Thank you very much, Zach, and thanks to your audience.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Adam, Jason, and Lisa for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or a review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.